You want to make money on MMA? Let be. You want to know who to put it in your parlay? Let be. You want to know a DraftKings stay away? Let be. So, who has the Leslie Smith underdog pick? Who is the Mexican dude and the lesbian chick? Everybody say you mean Lesbo and the Bean. Who's that out there living they dream? Lesbo and the Bean. Who's that still smoking all the green? Lesbo and the Bean. Come on, y'all, let me hear you scream. Lesbo and the Bean.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Episode 90. We got a preview on the way. It's Sunday. Feeling good. It's a holiday for some people. For us, you know, we bringing it at ya. Working on the weekends, whether it's a holiday or not, we're here for the fans.
It's a day for fools. I think it's a perfect day for us.
That is a good point. Very good point. But either way, we got to do some dirty work. How have you been, real quick, by the way, Lesbo?
I'm doing fantastic. We were just discussing how it's been so long since we've broken down a fight.
It does feel a little bit weird. I just feel like I keep looking at the same fights over and over and over again. And I have so much to say about so much. I think that this is going to be really advantageous for us to break down just the preliminaries today. And then we're going to get into the main event on Wednesday to get those final picks as the week goes on. Because again, it is a day of fools and a lot of people are fooling around out there. I've been seeing a lot of that Khabib talk. He's fallen out like 20 other times since. People were doing April Fools as of March 31st, just throwing that out
there. Yes, I think
so
too.
This is crazy.
That's the new,
though. It doesn't make
sense. They started selling Christmas stuff like October 29th.
Yeah, this is crazy.
They're just like trying to bleed it all.
Not the 31st. Doesn't make any damn sense.
And some people aren't good at practical jokes.
A lot of people aren't good at practical jokes.
No, a practical joke where people think someone's maimed or hurt, not funny.
I think that's terrorism these days.
Not
I think
funny.
That's what it's called.
Not funny at all.
So, any quick UFC
I've thought about this.
Info. Yeah,
we've gone back and forth how we want to break this down. Did we want to give you the main card first from the bottom to the top on Sunday to give it more days out there? Or did we want to go with the prelims first? And we've gone back and forth all week. And I really think it boils down to that we didn't want to jinx Ferguson and Khabib. And so we're like, let's just wait until Wednesday. Who knows what can happen to that fight? Everybody's still kid gloving it. It's too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just wait until it gets here. Let's not scare anybody. Let's not put any bad juju on it.
Totally agree. There is... It's hard to gather what information is the true information coming out. There has been some Tony talk real quick. He had a 30-45 minute interview with the UFC media, and it was a very interesting 30 minutes. He definitely thinks more like an artist, I'd say, than a professional. Well, he is a professional in his own sense, but he beats to his own drum. The beat of his own drum.
That's Tony Ferguson.
All the way. He's got his own rhythm and pattern, and it's working out for him.
That's I feel like he has so a lot of fun. Haters out there.
I think he has a ton, and that reflects in the odds, and we like to make money moves here at Lab B, so you better be liking and subscribing, because there's money to be made all over that main event, all under that preliminary card.
I know, people that say there's no money to be made on that fight are crazy.
But the money lines have shifted a lot since we've even come on the air. The lines have been out for a little while now, and everything's right in the spots where I think, but I still think that there's advantages, people being overlooked up and down on the card, so we're coming off of a great show a few weeks ago.
We're not going to talk about Tony Khabib too much because we're going to save that for Wednesday.
Sure.
And we are making you guys wait for that. Mm-hmm. We're making you wait for that information. Are we making you wait? We're not going to get into it today. It's too much.
What we are going to get into is the preliminaries and a breakdown.
Yay, fight talk.
We got 2-2-3 on the way. From Boston, is it? Or is it Brooklyn?
I feel like it's a New York card. All the big cards are in New York. All the big cards. And Aya Quinta, I'm guessing New York.
I'm guessing New York as well.
I'll pull it up right now. I'm in the mix.
I'm so excited that I can't even think about it. This is going to be on Fight Pass and FS1. Then it's going to transfer into a pay-per-view for the main event. But we're not even going to get all the way there. We're going to just go...
Brooklyn.
Over these Brooklyn matchups. We're going to have some really fun people coming in here. starting off this entire night, we have one of the most hyped prospects coming out of Dagestan with Zabit Magomedsharipov versus Kyle Bochniak, or Bochniak. He's definitely said it a few times, and MMA media can't seem to get it right, and we're just alike all of them, because there's some rough ones out there. Either way, we have Zabit coming in with a 14-1 record against the 9-2 Bochniak. Both of these men are UFC tested. Zabit has 2 fights in the UFC, finishing Mike Santiago off of the Contender Series, also beating as of late in a submission Simon Marais. Bochniak coming in as an underdog and beating Brandon Davis as of late, but losing to Jeremy Kennedy. He also has a split decision win over Enrique Barzola, and has also beaten or lost to Charles Rosas. Rosas had an iffy career. Either way, Bochniak, we know what we get with him. He's a striker, likes to stay on the distance, has good rhythm
and pace. Before we get into this, yeah. New York has a sketchy-ass commission.
What? Just a factor? We're going to be at sea level. Sketchy-ass commission
This is another thing. This is a short...
to the game.
It's a short little card, too. And they are kings over in New York of pulling out things, like, literally right at ringside.
Like, these fights might fall through regardless.
Yes. They're really crazy. Or, oh, you had a cold a week ago? Sorry, you're not fighting. Oh, your eye looks itchy. Sorry, you're not fighting. They're really strange. It's a really strange commission altogether.
They're the most new commission to the entire game. So they're not necessarily going with the California commission, which a lot of states just default to that because it's the innovator as far as commissions has been doing it one of the longest times. But, New York is kind of, because of all of that talk with the union and stuff, there's weird stuff that goes on in the background that can affect the final product of the show. I think it's a very good point you make, and
so I just
got to keep your eyes open. Just to keep watching that Twitter
stuff. If you do make any kind of parlay bets or DraftKings bets, if you're into watching the sport also for that reason, this is going to be an up-to-the-minute. Pay attention to Twitter. If you don't have Twitter, maybe you just have it to follow a couple of, you know, betting people for that reason if you're a gambler. You should have Twitter. It gives you the latest up-to-the-minute where you're going to see the breaking stuff, unless you're reading Chris Cyborg lately. Because she will April Fools you and say things like, Khabib out, Connor in.
In that broken English.
But Connor's in to save the car. Do you think he's all trained up, ready, just in case?
Of course, but they're going to have to pay him buku dollars. They're going to have to pay him so much more money. And I don't think that they would even let Connor do that because he brings in so many people.
They want so much advertising.
Exactly.
Time.
They want the month and 2 months before.
So I don't want to take away anything from Zabit. I just think we should pay attention to, if weird shit's going to go down, it's going to be in New York.
So
it's almost like mini Brazil. No, not like that at all. But who knows? I don't know what's going on.
It could be. And Bochniak, being the Bostonian himself, out of Massachusetts, he over the Dagestani or Russian fighter himself could have that. Though Bochniak has been criticized for his lack of commitment to go for finishes. He kind of wins those split decisions because he gets into a point striking battle and has actually good counters and good footwork with a good gas tank. Bochniak has serviceable wrestlings, okay entries on his takedowns. Top control, he's good. On hip of his back, we haven't seen him much, but I guess that's more of a testament to him keeping the fight where he wants, which is usually standing. What we see with Zabit, why people are such a fan of his, is because he's coming at you as a Russian tornado. He's throwing spinning kicks to the solar plexus, body, head, heel kicks, elbows, knees, coming out of that Jersey scene. He's fighting. He's a Daga fighter, but he's fighting, I know, with Frankie Edgar and all of that crew, the Mark Henry crew, and everybody there says Zabit's the next title contender, so also helping to that hype. Heavy, heavy favorite here is Zabit. I think it's like minus 800 right now.
Wow.
To Bochniak, which, here at that beat, we tend to be a little more tentative, I feel like, especially first fight of the night. This is starting off the night on Fight Pass. Everyone, this is a must-watch fight. I am going to give Bochniak much more credit than I initially thought. he tends to really fall back and retreat, and he'll give up two rounds at times to try to just win a point fight and just really counter off the back foot. It's not that Zabit won't be trying to go for the kill, but at times with the spinning attack of these Dagestani fighters, they leave themselves open and trust their chin and durability over leaving themselves openings, hoping that the guy, instead of he'll cover up and eat the shot. I think Bochniak's good enough to know that a spinning attack's coming and throw an overhand right and hurt the Russian fighter. So I think it's a much closer fight than people say. I think Zabit should be a 2-1 favorite, and that's about it. Minus 800, way too much on Zabit. Bochniak is a legit fighter. He's getting better every single fight. He's a hometown boy. I got Zabit submission round 3 just because I've heard his gas tank's through the roof. He just hasn't shown it yet because he's able to get people out of there. But I'm giving a lot of credit to Bochniak. How do you feel this one's going down?
I'm giving a little credit to Bochniak too, especially out of his neck of the woods. I never, one of my little rules I'm making besides the first fight of the night, which makes me want to stay away from it, I don't like a Bostonian fighting in New York City. I just don't like it. Don't like their odds there. There's something deep bred about the energy of Boston versus New York. So also, Bochniak tends to win one, lose one. So if we just stay on that trend, it's time for him to lose. All that being said, I like Zabit. I do think he is getting a huge hype train behind him. And this is my opinion of the very first UFC caliber he's meeting, in my opinion, of a real name, of a guy that is going to be worth his salt inside the octagon. Yep. This is the first time he's being tested, and I think a lot of the stuff, he tends to get very hurt and does take one to give one. Bochniak has good hands. Yep. I don't think he's a pushover anywhere. I think he's kind of well-rounded everywhere. Is he even close to the guy Zabit is on the ground? No. No, he's not. But is anyone to the Dagestani guys? They have that. That's their thing. It's like jiu-jitsu to a Brazilian. So I have it going to decision, and I think it's crazy. I think everyone that's going to bet high on Zabit, if he finishes, I don't know, even though he does lay a lot of punches, he has that kind of Demetrius Johnson fighting style. Does he have the Demetrius Johnson, or I should say Demetrius Johnson output? Does he have the Demetrius Johnson technique? No, he's a little wild, crazy as hell. Bochniak can catch someone at least enough to hurt him to make him reevaluate their game. And I think on the second he's hurt, he's going to go right to the ground, and I think Bochniak can defend for a little while. I don't know how good either guy's gas tank on, so I can see your third round submission really coming into play. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Zabit is going to have the strength in his arms to catch one of those crazy chokes or crazy submissions that he usually can catch early on in the rounds. I think this is going to be a weirder fight than everyone thinks. I'm going to stay far, far away from it. If I end up tight somewhere, I might put Bochniak on one just to, you know, throw my fishing pole into the great ocean of crazy. Zabit, I won't go too heavy on like everybody else.
Yep, I think that's a parlay buster. That's one of those that's going to ruin your entire night because everyone's going to put him on every parlay, every card. Yeah. And I'm just saying, don't put him on everything. I do believe he is the most expensive fighter. Do we even want to get into those lines?
We can talk about DraftKings. We just won't get into making our card until the Wednesday show. So, you know, we're going to release this now. This is going to be our prelim show. We're just going to talk about the prelim fighters because we think the main card is good enough to really give it that full amount of time. So stay tuned and make sure you like and subscribe if you give a shit what we have to say about that main card.
So real quick with the lines, we have Zabit at 9,500 against Bochniak's 6,700. Value's in Bochniak a little bit there for me on the spare note.
If he can make it out into the second round, it's worth every cent because you can fill with monsters. Yep. For 9,400 or 9,500, you got to get 130 points or more.
That's Zabit's average, though, is 132 points is his average.
How many fights has he had in the UFC?
Two.
Against
Bochniak's 5 or 6 fights.
Yeah, against who? What caliber guys?
Yeah, against Santiago and the other guy was.
And Mike Santiago.
Yeah, a debuting. Marias, not Sergio.
Not Sergio.
Yeah, not Sergio.
Not Santiago, not Sergio. Yeah,
not that it's a new it's a new debuting guy. So either way, just be tentative on that one. I think we got everything we got to say about
that. And I have
to say
one more thing about Zebby. Okay. He's a tiny little 145er, in my opinion.
No way. I thought he was pretty tall, was he not?
I don't know. Is he?
Yeah, he's pretty long. 6'1". He's gangly as hell. Yeah, that's why. He's crazy. He's a James Vick for the 145s.
I thought he was so tiny.
He's taller than James Vick.
He must be so lean across the top because of how tall he is that he just, I just thought he was so small.
Oh, no, no. He is, but he's a tornado. He literally just springs everywhere.
But at 6'1", if he's using his legs, oh, shit. I might have to change. I'm staying away from this. Bye. Go on. Move on.
So, on to the 205ers, we have a debuting Mike Rodriguez coming in from the Contender Series against Devin Clark, who's also come in from Looking for a Fighter, a different UFC promotional organization throughout the UFC. But Devin Clark first came in and Dana White offered him a contract exclusively at 185. Devin Clark lost that fight to
Jan
Alex Nicholas. The first fight, he lost his one. Then he went to 205, won two in a row. Then his last fight, he did lose, Devin Clark did, to Jan Błachowicz.
Our Leslie Smith underdog pick.
In a rear naked choke without any hooks in. Mm-hmm. So what I initially thought with Devin Clark was when he moved up to 205, his gas tank would be in check. He's up at Winklejohn's, and he would have that killer instinct. And at 205, it's just showed me that.
Did he change camps?
He should still be at Winklejohn's.
Maybe it has his old camp on here.
Yeah, or he goes back and forth from there. But I know specifically he's been at Winklejohn's.
Yeah, I remember.
So, with Devin Clark, though, at this 205 division, he likes to keep things striking. He has power in his strikes, moves in and outward really well. But that gas tank is only one round for me. Devin Clark, if even a round. After a few explosions, Devin Clark is completely gassed, and he's fighting off of fumes, and usually ends up getting overwhelmed. Jan Błachowicz, again, didn't even need to sink in the hooks, which is rare, and it just proves that Devin Clark, when he's gassed as well, has a little bit of that quit in him. I thought at 85 it was just a weight cut, but I saw that Jan could do that to him, and if we see that, other fighters see that. Mike Rodriguez, though, being a debuter, had an amazing showing coming in onto the Contender Series, finishing his fight via knockout with a flying knee in the first minute and a half, 2 minutes of that fight. He's coming in very, very tall at 9-2. He's only had a loss via submission, toe hold, over a year ago. Has since fought four times and won them all by TKO. He does have a decision earlier on in his career, but Mike Rodriguez is known to be a finisher. He's long and gangly, as long as he is, he's got incredibly long arms, throws flashy technique, throws elbows really well. I did go back and look at some of his CES fights. Mike Rodriguez is legit to an extent. He's really rough on the ground. The legit part of him is that even if he's in bad situations, and I saw a couple good wrestlers really get on Rodriguez and get him down, and instead of Rodriguez ever quitting on the ground, he ended up working his way out of the bottom position with elbows and moving his hips out and finally getting back up and finishing those grapplers later on in the rounds. So those TKOs are coming to be a quality as well. They're not just one and done knockouts.
Yeah.
He had to fight through it, and then in the second and third round, he's able to finish guys. Also, he got submitted on a toe hold, but he specifically fought another guy I saw later on in his career where a lot of those leg locks came in, and his leg game defense had dramatically stepped up at that point, because there was a few times where I was like, ooh, his knee could be done as long and gangly as. He turned over and ended up finishing him with hammer fists on the ground. Rodriguez may not have as good of a gas tank as Devin Clark. Devin Clark doesn't have that good of a gas tank. This is a coin flip of a fight. I like Rodriguez in this as an underdog. I think this is pretty close on the odds.
Is he an underdog?
Yeah, he's debuting against the veteran now.
He's the favorite on Tapology, Mike Rodriguez.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Then never mind. I thought I had the betting lines up earlier. Let me see that real quick. Either way, I got Rodriguez, TKO round one. And with the betting lines on this fight, we have Rodriguez -105 to the -115, Devin Clark. So this is a coin flip.
Yeah, coin flip.
Coin flip. Either fighter. I got Rodriguez finishing it. Maybe it shouldn't be in the first, more in the second, and it's more fading Devin Clark for myself. It's Devin Clark who just has worse showings, where I think Rodriguez has that potential of seeing things. I don't want to say he's John Jones because he's long, tall, and uses his all that stuff.
In but black.
He thinks really well. He thinks really well in the later rounds. Even though he's tired, Mike Rodriguez does smart things, which
good really, really likes.
Yeah, good ring IQ, even in the lower scenes. It showed a few times. So I like that. I like that as well. He's going to be someone to watch out for, but I'm sure other people are saying that. Hence, the coin flip of a fight. Who do you got in this one?
This is more of a stay away on Devin Clark for me than it is a hype train build on Rodriguez. And in fact, I think Rodriguez could ruin your night in a weird way, because you just don't know enough about him in the UFC. Devin Clark has not had a great UFC showing. I like Jan Błachowicz, so that loss to me was no surprise. But that loss, or me picking Jan, was not because I was a huge,
I think I had Devin Clark in that.
Jan fan.
Yeah, I remember you having him. I had Jan in his last one, but yeah.
Yeah, Devin Clark is just, I don't know if he's ever stepped up and been that UFC caliber guy to me.
I kind of agree with that. Totally.
It's more because I want to give Mike Rodriguez the benefit of the doubt in my head that he is that UFC caliber guy, and this is his first test. I won't jump on a hype train after something crazy happens for Mike Rodriguez, because in my head, I'm going to think he knocked out Devin Clark. So I think Devin Clark's fighting for his life right now. That's the scary part of him in the octagon. I got to think the UFC sees what we see, and the 205 division isn't really as desperate as it used to be, is it?
It's filling in there. They're definitely getting prospects just like Rodriguez. I don't think either loser leaves town here. I think Rodriguez will keep fighting, and so will Devin Clark, just because he has rattled off a couple wins in a row. And with the lacking still in the division, even though they're injecting people, they still got room to lose two or three in a row, because it's dramatic finishes at this weight class at 205. People go night-night.
I got Rodriguez KO round two, and I feel like it's going to be a TKO, because as you said, Devin Clark, when he's done, he's just done. He's just done. He has a little baby quit.
Exactly. So.
And I don't like, yeah, go on. I don't need to say anything. I don't need to say anything else about that.
So, as that one leaves such a good taste in your mouth, we're going to go into such a fun fight in Ashley Evans-Smith versus Beck Rawlings. This is definitely one of the rough ones of the night. There's a couple on here. The whole night, we're starting out with a beat, but this one is, we've been blocked by Ashley Evans-Smith
herself.
The more
I'm starting to get into these, I'm starting to think maybe you should put Zebby everywhere, because these all the rest of the fights are like
coin flip of fights. Yeah. Evans-Smith versus Beck Rawlings at 125 pounds. These are potential Chev contenders. So I can't put trust in either one of these
Say
ladies.
That again. We've been saying, these are potential women who will be fighting Bullet Valentina.
They're working their way up. One of these winners will eventually fight Chev for something. But guess who I'm going to be betting on? Against, I mean. Whoever wins this fight, because I really have shown, and unfortunately, I don't really like either of the fighters, and I don't want to talk trash and all this. It's just both of them have had a little bit of quit at times. Beck Rawlings has, and at times they've shown heart. They mentally, it's really hard to gauge them, is why I don't like either fighter so much. Because they can come in and have amazing showings and then have such a low fight IQ or lapse of judgment. And deservedly so. They're in brutal fights at times, but those brutal fights come about because there's holes in their games that is just tough to get around. They both have come off some injuries. Evan Smith, I believe, a few more with some knee issues potentially going on there. But if Evan Smith comes in with a good head game plan, she can win this fight. She's 5-3 at 30 years old against Beck Rawlings, 7-7 coming out of Australia. The 29-year-old is 1 year younger. Beck Rawlings has a three-fight losing streak against Evan Smith, two-fight losing streak. So Dio's got to go. Is it loser leave town, or do they both stay?
They both have to stay.
Vienna doesn't look like such a bad loss.
It's a weak division. They'll both stay.
Against Evan Smith.
And crazy
Morris
enough,
as well.
They both kind of have a UFC name.
Yeah, they do. They totally do. Beck Rawlings' last loss is split decision to Rose Clark. And then to Tisha Torres, not a bad loss. She also lost to Paige VanZant via TKO. So that one was the one that has really kept Paige in it, beating Beck Rawlings. So I want to fade both fighters, and I want to say disqualification, groin strike, and they both lose this one. Don't bet on it. I got Evan Smith. I hate it, but I do think the better entries and takedowns are the key to this fight. Beck Rawlings can't get off of her back, doesn't have flashy submissions. Evan Smith can keep a good top game, though Evan Smith can get beat on the feet a lot. She likes to keep it standing there, which I really dislike. If she really stayed on her ground game, Beck eventually gets tired. They both really get tired. This is a coin flip of a fight. I'm staying away from it, but I'm inching out. Evan Smith, be careful. How do you feel this one goes down?
Beck Rawlings isn't going to be strong enough here for Ashley Evan Smith. And if takedowns or anything, Beck Rawlings is going to get finished by a nasty elbow around 9-2 or round two. Beck, a weird thing with her is no matter how little she is, she kind of, her body never looks like she's strong. Ashley Evan Smith fighting at 135 was looking okay. At 125, she's going to look shredded. She's going to look a little better in her zone. I think she's just going to, Beck Rawlings isn't going to be able to deal with the pressure. Beck Rawlings is coming from 115. Ashley Evan Smith is coming from 135. This is going to, you're going to see a big difference here. I think Beck Rawlings is going to get thrown around the ring a little. I think Ashley Evan Smith is going to taste Beck Rawlings' power in the first round and not be threatened by it at all, and then be able to come in and do whatever she wants. And if she can come in and do whatever she wants, that's where those nasty elbows and inside knees, that's where Ashley Evan Smith will pull Beck Rawlings down and put a bunch of knees to the body. I feel like it'll all of a sudden look like Ashley Evan Smith, she's going to get to walk away with this fight, and people are going to get a crazy idea of Ashley Evan Smith after this fight that she's a man eater. I just think she's going to look better at 125, and skill wise, I have Ashley Evan Smith KO round two, and I'll probably put her on a few cards really thinking about it.
So Evan Smith is 8,800 on DraftKings. Ooh. Against Beck Rawlings, 7,400. Yeah, I'm staying so far away from this one.
I'll have Ashley Evan Smith on like two cards.
So you're thinking the finish happens, because I'm saying decision. Yeah. I'm just saying she holds her down for three rounds.
I think she can actually finish her. Beck Rawlings, she's has that light, fair skin. She has that soft skin. She got that Nick and Nate Diaz skin. She's going to get cut up. Ashley Evan Smith has nasty elbows. She has nasty inside knees.
Beck Rawlings with a 3-fight losing streak. This one's 4, and it's got to go for her. Evan Smith might get one more if she lost, but Beck.
Beck, what they'll do with her is kind of what they do with a lot of the older Brazilian guys, is they'll save her for Australian cards only, and she'll be able to fight as long as she wants to.
Or they got that Invicta scene. That needs an injection of just that perfect Beck fighter. People that make their names off Beck, and then they say, she beat Beck Rawlings at Invicta.
Yeah.
And she could be a contender there.
It might be time, but look at the woman, the 125 division, there's still other fighters that are young enough. Like the last two girls who lost to Ashley Evan Smith could both fight Beck Rawlings. They might be 135ers.
Anyways. We didn't get blocked by Evan Smith, or was it Evan Smith?
It wasn't Evan Smith.
It was Evil Eye.
It was Jessica Evil Eye.
Oh, I was thinking it was, so my bad, I take everything back. Evan Smith. I was thinking Evil Eye for some reason, but she was, I was saying earlier, we got blocked ourselves. We didn't get blocked by Evan Smith.
No, you said Evil Eye last time we talked about it on the podcast.
Oh, okay. I feel like I brought it up earlier.
Oh, maybe you did today.
Yeah. I was saying it, but either way, it's the level of quality.
I got Evan Smith.
Evil Eye. I got Evan Smith as well.
Round two, I will have her on a few cards.
No way. I'm going to save my money for other stuff. Definitely. But as we trudge along, we get to...
And it's more of a fade on Beck. I hate to say it.
Trying to fade it's both people there.
I know. I still think there's fights both women can win in the 125. It's such a weird division right now.
I don't know if there is too many that they can...
Think of the Tough House. That whole Tough House at 125.
I'll pick most of them over either one of those girls.
Huh.
Yep. So, on to, as we trudged along to... Artem Lobov versus Alex Caceres. This is definitely a FS or a Fight Pass exclusive, or this is the main card on Fight Pass before they go to FS1, so it's the profiled bout with Artem Lobov. I guess they're gonna sauce up the crowd with the Russian Hammer himself.
Well, Connor's and Connor boy, will be there
ringside for sure. With the 155 division, Connor's gonna be in the house, guaranteed. Guaranteed Connor's gonna be in the main event watching that fight to be like, all right, I guess I fight you next. So, Artem, though.
Or, all right, I guess I'm not fighting at the 155 anymore, because we talked about it yesterday. Would you rather fight GSP or Khabib Nurmagomedov?
GSP all day. Give me that fight. So, Caceres, Lobov, Lobov, you can't help but mention LeConnor when you say Lobov. That's the shadow that he's will forever live in. But Lobov is a serviceable striker. He's 14-14-1, a 500 fighter coming in against Alex Caceres is 13-11. Caceres coming off of that street fight scene with Jorge Masvidal and Kimbo Slice fighting out of Miami. Bruce Leroy himself is very existential, astrophysical, and into the mood and the vibe of things more than anything. He can go in there and just, it looks like he's on a date at the rink, riding around on skates. He just doesn't have expression. He doesn't really get mad. He feels that it's much more of a competition. Artem Lobov understands it's a competition, but he likes to make dogfights in there. And Caceres will bring the heat to an extent and get finishes. He's opportunistic when he does hurt people on the ground. He's very slick, does a lot of really crafty stuff. But Lobov, Artem Lobov has good takedown defense, generally likes to keep it striking. Caceres has much more spins. Remember that five-rounder that him and Yair went through where it's Spin City, both of these guys? Caceres can throw some weird stuff. Lobov does as well. Quote me. You can quote the bean here. Artem Lobov is going to throw a standing hammer fist. He's done it in every single one of his fights. If people don't notice it, I'll make a gift or something this time. He will throw a fist in the middle of it. It doesn't do anything, but it's just his own thing that he does. I really like it. Either way, Lobov can get picked apart on the legs. Caceres can get picked apart. That was front legs. It's who decides to use the leg kicks for me more. And I feel like Caceres can use that more. This is going to be a itchy, grinding point fight. I don't really advantage anyone heavily on the ground. Lobov isn't a submission threat at all. Caceres is definitely the threat at all. But no takedowns are going to be thrown here. If any, it's going to be Bruce Leroy, not by Lobov. This is a split decision. Throw a coin in the air. Pick a baby by the hair. I don't know who you're going to get. I'm going to go with Lobov. Disgusting, dirty split. You can count on the split decision. Staying the fuck away from this fight. There's no finish here. How do you feel this one goes down?
I think Lobov can finish the fight. And I think he has to finish. It'll happen toward the end. And it'll just be because Bruce Leroy gets himself in the worst situations. It's almost like he finds out where the fighter's the strongest and then tries to fight the fighter there. And it never, ever works out. There are so few fights that I think Lobov can win. But somehow I feel like he can win this one. I feel Bruce Leroy, it's not even a ring IQ. He's just too, he just throws too many risks in there. He gets hurt, and then he has to put up with a few minutes of really gruesome, ugly grinding for unnecessary reasons because he was trying to do something crazy and then gets clipped. Yeah. And he does it again and again. Lobov is constant forward moving pressure. Constant forward moving pressure. And he's so constant forward moving, he doesn't stay in the outside range in the worry of getting clipped by one of those crazy Bruce Leroy kicks.
Spinning kicks.
Yeah, I also think he uses leg kicks all right, but he also, because of the constant moving pressure, all he sets up with somebody trying to throw leg kicks at him is he's in that inside range ready to take the left or right punch after they throw the leg kick. So then they stop doing that very immediately. Lobov's a weird guy. I know he's 50-50. We all know he's Connor's boy. I have a prediction here, and this is a crazy prediction. I think Artem Lobov wins this fight, however it happens. I don't know if it's by decision, split, whatever. Mm-hmm. I have KO round three. I just think he catches him weird at round three, and I can see the excitement in him. I can picture the ending. And his next fight is going to be BJ Penn's retirement fight in Hawaii.
Wow. Bold prediction by Les.
And that's actually a fight that I don't want to see BJ Penn fight anymore, but I actually think BJ Penn might have an opportunity to win that fight because of what you were talking about with the ground game and takedown defense and whatever. You can have good takedown defense, but BJ Penn is a different guy. It's a good fight for him in Hawaii. I'm not really worried about him getting KO'd and flatlined in the first minute of round one because of Artem's fighting style.
So we both have the underdog in Lobov.
The Russian Hammer.
The Russian Hammer at plus 115 to minus 145 against Alex Caceres. Also Caceres 8,500 on DraftKings against Lobov's 7-7. I'll speckle Lobov as well. Even Caceres a little bit. And I don't see
how much did you say Caceres was?
8,500.
Nope. Nowhere. Not worth it to me. How much are his average points he lays out?
52 compared to Lobov's 41.
Yep, Lobov. He's the money in that fight.
He's the wage gauge there. Yep. As of right now, he is our underdog. So, but we got a whole nother day to go before we get, a couple days to go before we get there. Either way,
this is such a to-be-continued episode. I might have to even put that at the bottom of it, like our own, like, Scooby-Doo. Continued.
Though, on to the card, we get
into
the lightweights. We have Evan Dunham versus Alban Mercier. Mercier is at a hell of a fight, a hell of a time getting a fight, finally having Evan Dunham step in. Was it Gilbert Burns ended up falling out like the day of the fight last when then Mercier ended up ducking his fans in Orlando Arena himself, not wanting to go to Denny's, not realizing that his fans were all about just hanging out with, what do they call him? OAM Mercier or the Quebec Kid.
The Quebec Kid.
So we know what we get with the UFC alumni. Evan Dunham is a longtime veteran, but the alumni is OAM. 10-2, he's coming out with a 3-fight winning streak, only getting a loss in there against Carlos Diego Ferreira in a decision. Mercier tends to win via decision and or submission. He's definitely grown up in the sport. His jiu-jitsu game, ground game, top game is definitely where he makes all of his money, getting people to the ground and holding position until the fight is over. He's a very strong young man, has evolving striking, but actually is where he lacks the most. His head movement isn't all that well. He tends to get pieced apart and really shoots haphazard shots to really push you up against the fence, drag you down to the ground, and hold you along the fence. And he is more than willing to ride people out against the cage. Evan Dunham, though, the ever-perennial UFC gatekeeper, Dunham has lost to the best, beat not the best, but really shows that off of a 4-fight winning streak. Rodrigo Dam being one of those guys' decision. He's also beat Ross Pearson, Joe Lozon, and also Rick Glenn decision. He's coming off of a draw versus Dariush, majority draw, and Dariush has kind of really fallen off since then. But Evan Dunham, to all credit, has really looked good later in his years. He is 18-6, being a perennial guy in there. He's had a ton of fight against the best, like I was saying before. He tends to keep it striking, but on the ground, Evan Dunham is super underrated. He's really good being a lineage of all those, who are the Extreme Couture guys, but he's also been at all the mega camps. He actually teaches a lot of jiu-jitsu, I believe, as well. That's where Dunham really, back in the day, used to really make his money, was also on the ground. So, Alban's top ground game is really going to be put to a test here, and I think a lot of people are overlooking that and just thinking that Dunham's winning these decisions via striking. But he's one of these guys who started off jiu-jitsu wise, no one wanted to go to the ground, so he had to get good at striking and then gets caught up there. Dunham has better takedowns here. If they go to the ground, I'm giving the advantage to Dunham. I think he can get a lot of reversals, loves to play that butterfly game and really sweep people, keep people on top. Mercier, his gas tank has been an issue for him, and I think it can play out in the later rounds. I think it's going to go 1-1 going into the third round, and that third round, Evan Dunham has proven to have a little bit more in the gas tank. I got an underdog in Evan Dunham. You should have took me to Denny's, homie. You could have bought yourself a like. But now you're going to meet Evan Dunham. And I think he's got a decision in the underdog. I'm going with Dunham. How do you feel this one goes down at the end of the night?
If we had a new category that we start making on if you want to put a couple of dollars on a fight that's going to go to split decision or draw, this is the money I would put that's going to go to a dirty split or a draw tonight. I think this is going to be a very close fight. A fan favorite going into this is going to be Aubin Mercier. I have to agree with you all over the place here. I have Dunham decision. I think he's underrated in a lot of places, and he's like the American wrestling version of Maya. Like, he's underrated. Uh-huh. He goes to the ground, he's gonna stifle you, and it makes for one of those boring, when Frankie Edgar gets into the grind type fights. But Evan Dunham has that in him. He's been in the game a long time. My red flag for Aubin Mercier here is when guys lose a fight, especially 2-3 months ago now, it's been that perfect amount of time, when they have a fight fallout and they don't get one immediately, they tend to stay in these 6 month long camps, and we tend to see it's not good for their body.
Yeah, right.
And I have a prediction afterward. We see Aubin Mercier in an interview with Ariel Helwani saying that, "I didn't have the in between for my body to cut. I just went from camp and started another camp."
Mm-hmm.
And I think your body needs the repair time. I think it needs the recoup time. I don't like this fight for Aubin Mercier, and depending on the excitement of it, sadly enough, I think Aubin Mercier, I think he's going to be crawling the ladder still in this division in the UFC. Evan Dunham's not the right route. I got Evan Dunham decision, or dirty, dirty split decision. Could even be a boring draw by the end.
Yep.
Evan Dunham.
Evan Dunham is 8,100 against Aubin Mercier's 8,100 DraftKings.
Wow.
And the odds, actually, we do not have the underdog here. We have the favorite with the minus 140 against the plus 110 Aubin Mercier. So the line is flipped. Early, when it opened, Aubin Mercier was the favorite. Betting, now that the lines have been out for a little while, the bettors have come in and pushed the line the right way. That's the way that I definitely had that fight. I made some bets when the first lines came out, but we were holding off to get this breakdown in because it's the way it goes.
We didn't want to blow our wad, so to speak.
Exactly.
But I have to say, you are right on the Dunham decision. One big thing you were right on: should have taken us to Denny's, homie.
We would have taken you.
We would have taken the tree. Yeah, the tree. We don't need your UFC money.
You don't need sugar in your coffee. You don't need butter on your bacon, homie. It would have been good. We would have got you a fruit bowl.
I would have got you an omelet, boy. I would have got you moons over my hammy.
So, as the preliminaries go on, we have a jewel of a fight in Joe Lozon first.
We thought Chris, we were so slick. I thought I was slick.
Me too,
with Dunham.
Me too.
And then we
would
pick the favorite.
Well, the odds that have changed favorite, so bettors have come in. There's still money to be had. This may be one of those ways to make that some of that money with Joe Lozon against Gutzmacher.
Gutzmacher.
Coming in with a 2-loss losing streak in the UFC.
His name should be Mentos.
Grootsmaka?
Yeah.
Because you feel that.
Because he's the Grootsmaka. You know, they're the fresh Mika.
So Grootsmaka is 13-3. His only 3 losses coming as of late in his career. The 31-year-old's coming out of Arizona, fighting out of the Knuckles Sports Academy. His last 2 losses are via submission against Davey Ramos and Chaz Skelly, but he has beaten, who is it, Abner Lovaris in a decision, but he's also lost to Artem Lobov. Grootsmacher is barely holding on to a career. He was a part of the Ultimate Fighter where he had a few wins as well. Joe Lozon coming in with a 27-14 record, one of the first few Twitter megastars via the UFC and just Twitterverse. Really has a child heartwarming story. We've went over it a million times. He fights for his family and his daughter. Longtime fighter. One of the guys that at 33 is young in life, but old in the cage. He definitely has started to feel those effects of having a long fight career. He was fighting 18, 16 years old. There's footage of him fighting grown men. He's been a pro fighter for a long time, having tons of wins and losses in the UFC. He's coming off of a 2-fight losing streak as well. Joe Lozon, a perennial gatekeeper as well, losing as of late to Clay Guida via TKO 4 months ago, losing to Stevie Ray in a decision, and beating Marcin Held in a split decision. But before that, losing to Jim Miller in a split. Joe Lozon Ace on the Ground, Grootsmacher's number one issue is with ground games. But what I really didn't like as of late with Lozon is that Stevie Ray fight decision. Joe Lozon had Stevie Ray on all sorts of hurt for the first round and gassed so badly that he gave up the last two rounds to Stevie Ray. And Joe Lozon definitely, like I was saying before, I think it was show notice against Stevie Ray, but even his Clay Guida, Quay put a pace on him that eventually accumulated the strikes, and Clay Guida does not tend to finish people via the strikes. Les Dog trying to get all up in this play, but I don't think it's going to end up working. I don't think it's going to work. I'm not liking Grootsmacher, but I'm just saying be careful with Joe Lozon. Four fights, being knocked out against somebody who doesn't knock people out is a major red flag. Joe Lozon's already had these red flags in his career. I'm not going to put tons of money on Lozon, but there is a direct path for Joe Lozon. The direct path for Grootsmacher is the striking, and he's hella tough. That's his number one attribute for Grootsmacher. He's earlier in his fight career, so he might be able to take it a little bit longer and in that second and third round finish Joe Lozon. I am going with a decided favorite in Lozon, but I'm just saying be careful. I'm not going to have Joey everywhere because it's that fade's coming soon, sooner J-Lo. Than later. Yep.
J-Lo
himself. It's you just got to be tentative. I might put a couple plays on Grootsmacher. How do you feel this one goes down? I got Lozon. Some decision.
You're feeling decision. A little bit like Les Dog could come out of the bag here.
I got decision, Joe Lozon. I had submission earlier in the week. I think it's grimy just because Grootsmacher will survive. He won't be winning, but he can survive it.
I think Joe Lozon can find that neck. I got submission round two. Grootsmacher, he's just not a finisher. I want to say it's a red flag because if you don't think somebody's a knockout artist, they need to fight Joe Lozon. Because he just has been tending to get knocked out a lot by crazy people that you're not thinking.
Exactly.
This is a little worrisome for me, this fight at all. I think he's taking it because he's a local fan favorite up in the Massachusetts, New England area.
Is 4 months ago too soon to be knocked out?
It's right on that line for me.
We usually say 6 months. So 2 months short of that.
I have to hope Joe Lozon's watched Grootsmacher's last fights and sees the opening for the submission. I have to think the guy has been in the octagon so long, he can find it by round two. I'm going to stay far, far away from this fight.
I would agree with that. Grootsmacher plus 145 against Joe Lozon's minus 175. I think you could put a parlay with Grootsmacher in there with a couple other underdogs that have a shot. Les Dog trying to tell us something there. Grootsmacher might have a couple plays in there. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just saying. If everyone's just like, oh, I can't believe he beat Joe Lozon. It's not the same Joe Lozon, people. It's really unfortunate, but he needs to move on to just keep coaching his academies and doing that other stuff. He's had a great career. I'm having a live air switch. I'm going Grootsmacher. Decision. I'm not liking that Joey pick. Plus 140. Underdog. Grootsmacher. Coming through with a decision.
Whoa.
That's more of a fade. That's more of a fade than anything. Be careful. We still got time before the fights go on. Though, we go on to the flyweights. This one, I feel like, is a little more one-sided. We have a hell of a dogfight with Brandon Moreno against the Tex-Mexican Devil, Ray Borg himself. This is some Mexican-on-Mexican crime. The American-Mexican against the Mexican-Mexican. Who's going to take home the bacon? Who decides to stay in the UFC? Or USA, I mean, when this is all over. Moreno really come out to be a baby face. The baby, or assassin baby. Moreno came off with a couple big underdog wins as of late. Last losing to Sergio Pettis in a heavy one-sided decision 7 months ago, Mexico City. The air taking a little bit of effect. The 14-4 Moreno coming in against the 24-year-old Ray Borg. Both of these men are 24 years old. Ray Borg coming in off of a loss to Demetrius Johnson, armbar, 5 months ago. Didn't take that much of a beating, but ended up finally getting submitted due to the champ. Before that, he had a two-fight winning streak against Jussie Formiga and Luis Smoka. Ray Borg, in his 11-3 record, has only also lost to Justin Scoggins, who is borderline staying in the UFC, Justin Scoggins. So, Ray Borg has had some low fight IQ. It's really been his weight. Ray Borg has suffered from those weight issues and weight cuts. He's a short guy, so he doesn't want to move up because he feels like he gives up reach. But it doesn't matter. Brandon Moreno being 6'7 at 125 pounds is going to be taller than most guys. Ray Borg, you're going to be smaller either
way. He's 5'7.
Or 5'7, sorry.
Can you imagine if he was 6'7 fighting
that 120? Ray Borg, though, being 5'4, is still shorter, but Ray Borg knows how to fight these taller guys. He tends to get in on the hips, take them to the ground, and Moreno is one of these guys that can be
who
submitted.
Who is a taller guy? Smoka?
Yeah.
Other than that, they're all babies.
They're all shorties, is what you mean. Little guys by Borg. Moreno is really flashy, keeps it striking, throws knees in all sorts of round. He's really confident on his submission gain off of his back is why he throws that. Brandon Moreno is an ace on the ground. A lot of California guys, he goes and trains all over there. Like, Moreno is a tough little guy. He scrambles really well. When guys tend to say that he scrambles really well, it's because he's not using technique as much in the gym, but just tenacity and not willing to give that up, where a really technically sound guy won't let that scramble to happen. And I feel like Ray Borg is that technically sound guy. Ray Borg has always been a ground fighter. The striking is where he's going to end up losing this fight a bit more. But I've really, really liked Ray Borg's jab as of late. And we really saw Sergio Pettis use that jab heavily against Moreno. I think it plays here. Moreno, especially when he starts to get tired after those flashy techniques and spins and stuff, he really comes in with the looping punches. And we've seen Ray Borg really keep a good game plan even with that gas tank starts to wear a little bit more. I think the fight IQ goes to Borg a little bit more. On the ground, I give a much bigger ground advantage because I do think Borg can really, when his top game is so pressure heavy that guys that are crafty and just throw stuff up all the time don't have those options. It's Frankie Edgar-esque versus Jair. It's like, oh no, you can't throw those crazy legs up because that option was never given to you. I got Ray Borg decision. Maybe a finish later on, but definitely it's going to be a scramble of a fight. This one could be a fight of the night contender for me, honestly, because both guys willing to go, though the guy with a clearer path to victory, Ray Borg. How do you feel this one goes down at the end?
I like everything you're saying. I just don't have a good feeling. Everybody's worried about Khabib. Myself, I was worried about Joanna. I think her and her team had to have seen the whole weight cut scare that I've been shouting about for a year. So I think she's going to have that under control. You want to know a fight that's not going to make it because of the scales? It's going to be Ray Borg. No one looks worse on the scale than Ray Borg. There isn't anyone in the UFC that looks closer to death. Homeboy should not be fighting at this weight anymore. His body does not agree with it. And Moreno, in my opinion, he is one of the more powerful guys at 125. He is one of the guys with the most knockout power at 125. And I think Brandon Moreno, I did have Moreno decision because I just think the kid's growing and growing and growing. I don't like Ray Borg at this weight, and I think the dehydration, even if it doesn't get him fully knocked out, it's going to hurt him enough that he doesn't necessarily play to the full. And Demetrius Johnson's a natural 125 guy. He could even fight at 135, but he's a little guy. Brandon Moreno's not a little guy. He's not going to have any problem with getting bullied around by Ray Borg. I think he's advancing. I think he's a solid underdog pick. I have him decision, but I actually am going to put a knockout round three.
For
Brandon Moreno.
Woo!
And it's really for the dehydration of Ray Borg. I don't like him in this division. I don't care about his height. It might be bad for him, but I think height is proving that to be a naysay for Kelvin Gastelum. Like, he's still doing
what
he's doing.
There's a bunch of other guys proving it. Mm-hmm. Right.
So I like Moreno KO round three here. I do not like Borg's dehydration.
Ray Borg is the -275 favorite against the +215 Moreno pick. Moreno Grootschmacher on a parlay right there might make you a little bit of cash just running out there. I like what you're saying. I like what you're saying with Moreno. You got to be careful with that young man. This is a really fun fight. These guys are both going to stay in for a long time in the divisions. I think they both eventually will move up. I don't think it's just going to be Ray Borg moving up. I think Moreno is going to fill in a little more muscle, and it's
going to
get harder
for him.
They're both 24 years old. They got room to grow.
Yeah. I like both guys. I do think this could be an interesting fight if it makes it there. I just think Ray Borg is having a harder time with the weight cut on his body. I think he's broader across his top.
Real quick with DraftKings, we have Ray Borg at 9,200 against Moreno 7,000. So,
wow, Moreno, I think you can put Moreno on some places. He's not going to get finished by Ray Borg.
I see, though, Ray Borg being a monster as far as taking him down, which is 3 points, and then landing those rapid punches from side control along the cage for 3 rounds. And I can see that adding up. Just a thought. So, it's iffy. Ray Borg, though, 9-2 is too much.
Ray Borg's average score on DraftKings?
68 points against 83 for Moreno.
Nope. No. No. 83 for Moreno, and he's not really a finisher. It's because of the amount of volume he throws in his punches. And Moreno, another thing neither of us discussed, great kicks.
Yeah.
Great kicks.
He's
been working on them. They've been developing as his game's gone on. If you watch his first fights, they're hardly there, but toward his latter ones, I like this fight.
It is a fun one. Also a contender for Fight of the Night, for sure. But on to the prelims, main event, we finally got there. We have Felice Herring versus Carolina Gavelkovic at strawweight, 115 pounds. Both of these women are longtime contenders in the UFC's 115 division. KK coming off of a win too, with an 11-2 record to Jody Escobel decision, but last lost her fight to Gedalia in a submission, and also to JJ via decision. Actually had JJ hurt a few times with some elbows in there. We know what KK wants to do against Felice Herring, who has 14-6, longtime 33-year-old veteran, coming off of the fight contender, or the fight tough show. Felice Herring is longtime training partner of freaking Cookie Monster, Carla Esparza herself. Felice Herring, mentally, has always been her big issue as well. KK, we don't have to worry about that mental thing. I absolutely love KK. She's a Polish fighter, 32 years old, longtime combat sports veteran. Every time she goes in there, crosses her legs on that poster, she comes out and brings the strikes to you. She's a accomplished kickboxer, throws good kicks every once in a while, not tons of power, tends to kill you with those 1,000 cuts, but does a good job of it by moving off of angles, exiting well on her exchanges, and has good takedown defense. Though on the ground, we have seen some weaknesses with KK, and that's where Felice Herring does have the most potential. Striking-wise, this is a very interesting matchup due to the fact that Herring, to me, is much more that Muay Thai striker, and KK is much more of a kickboxer, and those are very... they have the same elements, but they throw everything a little bit differently. But I will say that the more well-rounded mixed martial artist for me is Felice Herring. She's proven that as of late a bit more, coming off of a 4-fight winning streak. Felice Herring has come off of beating Courtney Casey split decision 3 months ago. Also beating Justine Kish, Alexa Grasso with a big underdog there, Caitlin Curran, and only losing to Paige VanZant via decision, where Felice Herring said it was all a mental game, her weight cut was bad and all that stuff, but Herring's really got her mental game in there. This is a coin flip of a fight. I really like it as the headlining fight, because on the ground, KK is really serviceable. Herring has better takedowns, better entries. KK's never going to shoot in the fight at all whatsoever, but striking, this could get really tentative and they both just pick at each other. I could see it being boring, but I think it's going to be a scrappy fight. Felice Herring has a good gas tank. If not, I want to say a bit better of a gas tank than KK. And KK can start to really slow down into those 3-punch combinations later on in the fight, where she really throws 5 and 6 early on in the fight. But KK also gets better as the fights go along. But I could say that as well for Felice Herring with her Muay Thai, which they warm up. It's an interesting matchup. It's a coin flip for me. I'm going Herring decision right now. I could see myself switching every other day. I'm not going to go heavy one side. I think it's dirty split. 2 rounds go to one. I don't know who gets each 2 rounds, because it's going to be a scramble.
Wow. Every fight has kind of this lore about it. That they've done a really nice job
matching
these fights together.
Matching them together.
Let me shake it out. Okay, Kovalchuk, Carolina. both women, I could say this about. Both women tend to fight up or down to their opponent. Uh-huh. That is so dangerous coming into a fight where, so it could either be a bloody, gruesome brawl to the end where they end up hugging and it's crazy, like one of the woman's fights of lifetime, or it's a boring pepper match where every once in a while they get into a literal boxing clinch up that nothing happens so frequently that the ref has to come in and split it up. Felice is hungrier. Felice has less quit. Felice is not going to get knocked out. Both women have good chins. Felice has more power. Felice has better takedowns. Carolina, maybe better hand combinations. That's really the only thing I'd give her.
Yeah.
And Carolina, I really love KK. I think she's one of the cutest people ever. In my opinion, her claim to fame is that she went 5 rounds with JJ. That's her highlight reel when I play it in my head. I think Felice has more power in her hands than Joanna. I think this could be a dangerous fight for Carolina Kowalczyk. I actually have Felice Herring. I think she's going to hurt her, and I think she's going to grab. I think she's going to submit her in round three. I think Felice also has the better cardio in this. Yeah, crazy, crazy fight. I hate to say it. I think Felice is on her way up and an interesting person to watch battle. I wouldn't.
She's a more complete mixed martial artist.
Yeah, I haven't seen. KK hasn't.
On the ground, she got submitted up by Gedalia, who's a little beast on the ground.
Gedalia is going to submit up most of the girls in that division. But I think Felice has that kind of power. That Gedalia power. And Carolina isn't strong. Not that she's not strong. She's not as strong as these other women. So I got Herring submission round three here.
Whoa, we're both going with Herring. We both have an underdog here. Maybe a play for underdog of the night with KK being -185 against Felice Herring's +150. So I'm putting Felice Herring, Gutzmacher, and potentially.
And I trust both girls are going to come out and bring it. I think this is going to be a perfect way to end the prelims. I think it's going to be gnarly. I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be a lot of stand up unless Felice is taking it down. And it's really who's going to have more strength at the end. And I see that being Felice.
So Carolina is 9,000 on DraftKings against the 7-2. Felice Herring's a wager gauger all the way around. I like her output. I like her takedown.
She might be the Leslie Smith underdog. I think you're going to have to wait until Wednesday's show for that.
I think we are. So that's the preliminaries. Definitely let us know how you feel about the way things are going out there on the YouTube. And or leave a comment, subscribe, hit that 5-star if you feel like it. It would help out.
Oh, you know what I was thinking? If you actually hit a 5-star on iTunes, because that's where it matters the most. I don't know why, but for advertisers and things like that, that's where it matters the most. If you go on iTunes and you write us a 5-star, we'll read it on air and we'll like give you a full shout out. Any of the 5-stars.
Shout out. I'm
trying to get that rating up on iTunes so people can find Lat B. Make sure you're liking and subscribing. Lesbo and the Bean everywhere. Gmail, iTunes, YouTube. And if you haven't looked at our YouTube lately and you tend to be an audio listener, we are adding more content to that, so it's not just for your ears, it's also for your eyes. So thanks again for the likes and listens.
That's more than me.